From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. My first guest today is the senior U.S. Senator for Illinois, Dick Durbin. He's in his fifth term in the Senate, and for 20 years, he's been the number two Democrat there. But Durbin recently announced he would not be running for re-election. In order to accommodate the senator's schedule, we spoke early this morning. Senator Durbin, welcome back to The 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Great to be here.
One of the big topics in Washington this week has been that the Trump administration is preparing to accept a gift from the government of Qatar, the royal family, I guess, namely a giant aircraft that would go into use as Air Force One, but then be converted to private use for Trump after he would leave office. The Attorney General has deemed this legally permissible. Where are we on this? How is this happening, I guess, is my question.
It is an embarrassment that the President of the United States is contemplating receiving a gift worth $400 million plus. It is reckless for him to consider taking that gift and using it in the United States or for his official duties, this gift from a foreign country. Let me be specific. If the Qataris said, listen, we got a great deal for you, Mr. President. We're going to save the taxpayers money. We are going to personally rewire and redecorate your Oval Office, the Situation Room, and your residence. Wouldn't that be a great deal? Well, of course it would not. I mean, you can't imagine a foreign government turning over that responsibility to a foreign government and compromising security in the United States. That is exactly what's happening here. Air Force One is the White House with wings, and critical decisions are made. We would have to go through, if we accepted this plane, and physically inspect, in some places remove, 200 miles of wiring inside the plane. The net result is an expense to modify the plane for our safety and security at a cost even greater than the plane's worth. This is a dumb idea.
You know, it seems this administration is disregarding norms, at minimum laws, arguably, around corruption in government. You know, I'm old enough to remember when the Lincoln bedroom was a watchword in Washington. You know, the Clinton Foundation came in for criticism. I wonder what it says to you about, you know, the way the Congress isn't, or rather, I guess, is not dealing with the erosion of norms in Washington and adherence to laws.
So far, the Republican majority in the House and the Senate has been unwilling to assert our constitutional authority and responsibility. When the president says he's going to do it, there's silence, crickets from the Republican side of the aisle. Let me take you back in history for a minute, just so we can get an analogy. There was a time when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was such a popular president, he was reelected again and again. And after one of those powerful reelections, he thought to himself, the only problem I have is that damn Supreme Court. So I'm going to change that once and for all. We have a Democratic Congress. I just wanted reelection. I'm going to add justices to the Supreme Court so I start winning instead of losing. So he came up with this idea, presented it to the Democratic majority in the House and the Senate, and they said, Mr. President, we oppose this. You don't have the authority to do this, and we'll stop you if you try. And we're going to do it on a bipartisan basis. Democrats and Republicans in Congress stopped FDR from packing the court. It just showed that when you stand up for the Constitution on a bipartisan basis, it can be that powerful. This is exactly the opposite of what's going on right now. The Republicans in Congress are walking away from our constitutional authority and responsibility because of their fear that Donald Trump will cost them re-election.
Do you still see this as a sort of asymmetric, or that's a fancy word, one-sided? I mean, there were calls to pack the court under President Biden when you were chairman of the Judiciary Committee just a few years ago. I remember talking about this with you. And, you know, we've certainly seen, as an example, Republicans breaking norms in the Senate in terms of, you know, who gets a hearing for court nominations, for example, and when. Do you think Democrats have really grasped the level of I pick your metaphor, street fighting, combat that Republicans are doing in Washington, and you know, and are you fighting back with equal vigor and equal force? I guess.
Let me say to my friends and those who aren't listening, let's be honest in our conversations about the authority of a Democratic minority in Congress. The Republicans control the House of Representatives and the Senate by virtue of winning an last election. Until we regain this majority, we have limited authority, very limited authority. We can complain publicly, and there are a few things we can do if we embark on a procedure, but we just don't have the power to do the things which my progressive friends would like to see done. We have examples where we've tried to stop nominations. We have so far, you could count on one hand the number of nominations we've stopped in the last 5 months. One of them was stopped last week. Ed Martin, who was to be the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, one of the most powerful positions, his background was so bad and so controversial that the Republicans couldn't understand how they could vote for him and explain it back home. And they withdrew his nomination. That rarely happens. It happened in his case because it was so extreme. In the 5 months of this Congress, we have passed five bills in the United States Senate. 5 months, five bills. If we were getting paid on the basis of piecework, we wouldn't be receiving minimum wage for these last 5 months.
What do you say, though? So you talked about the difficulty in stopping nominations, for example. I think of, like, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, former Fox television weekend host. You know, Senator Joni Ernst was arguably more responsible than anyone for enabling him to go through when there were some serious reservations, reportedly, among your colleagues. And yet this week, just yesterday, you're talking about, you know, co-sponsoring legislation with her that has to do with farming and conservation. I think there are some who would say, why work with them at all on anything? Why not just throw sand in every gear you possibly can at this point?
If I have a chance to work on a bipartisan basis and do something that I think is good for our state and good for the nation, I'm going to do it. I find it's interesting. Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, who has been in the Senate for a few years, he and I worked together on sentencing reform under the Trump administration in the first go-around, and we made dramatic changes, more than has been done in 30 years. Chuck and I probably don't agree on 90% of the things that come before us, but we found agreement there. I think people are looking for us to find good solutions on a bipartisan basis, and I'm going to continue to work in that direction.
I also want to ask Senator Durbin, I understand this morning, again, we're taping early in the morning, but today you're set to meet with representatives from public radio in Illinois about potential cuts to public broadcasting. Obviously, this is of concern to us at the 21st show and Illinois Public Media. We are a public broadcaster. What is the appetite among members of Congress, I guess particularly in the Republican majority, for ending funding for public media as compared to where it's been in the past?
Sadly, it's no surprise to me that we're having this conversation. In his first term in office, President Trump did not go after NPR and PBS, but now he has. And I take it very seriously. If he had his way, you wouldn't be sitting at that microphone. We would shut you down tomorrow. I will resist this with every ounce of political fiber in my system because I believe that NPR and PBS are a critical delivery of news in a free and democratic society. And to shut them down would be a loss in public conversation that we would feel for generations to come. It is a curious way we finance your operation. We finance it 2 years in advance. So we're talking about fiscal year 27, 2 years from now, that there would be no federal support. Personally, I would, you know, my preference is find a way, we should find a way, Congress should find a way to wean PBS and NPR from federal support, make them truly independent, and find a way to achieve that. So this, any given president in the future can't take this kind of a slash and burn attitude toward the future of public broadcast.
When you say we need, you mean it do eventually eliminate federal funding, but more gradually over time?
Yes, and perhaps create a mechanism to do it that is reliable and is not subject to political winds changing as they have with this Trump administration. But for now, the fight is on. I'll do everything I can to stop Trump from defunding public broadcasting.
You know, among the other things that the federal government may be defunding are aspects of the Medicaid program, certainly not entirely, but making significant cuts there. Republicans have talked about adding work requirements, for example. This could be a huge problem in Illinois, both for the sort of from a state budgetary perspective, obviously, but also the people who rely on Medicaid, the poor, the elderly, and the disabled who get their health care through that. Where is that fight right now?
Well, I worry about this fight because this is one that really comes home to Illinois. It is very obvious. If the Republicans cut Medicaid by $80 billion, the heads of hospitals from all over the state visited with me in Washington 2 weeks ago and made it clear hospitals will close in Illinois. Downstate hospitals in rural areas and small town areas, as well as in the city of Chicago and the Cook County region, they're going to be gone. And it means that the woman in labor won't have a 20-minute drive to the hospital. It may be an hour and 20 minutes. And that's the reality of distance and what it can do to medical care. I worry about this very much. I think this is a critical element. And this notion of work requirements, for goodness sakes, the majority of money being spent in Medicaid in Illinois is going to people in nursing homes who are getting by very basics on a regular basis and not living a lavish or luxurious lifestyle. Their families are happy to have them in a place that they're confident will treat them nicely and respectfully. But if that is gone, if that mother or grandmother has to move in with the family, it's a real hardship. We ought to be honest about what the Medicaid cuts will mean, and they are devastating to our state.
You have announced you're stepping down at the end of this term after a long career in public service. We asked some members of our texting group about this. Ann in Urbana said, I think since he's retiring, he should work at creating an intensive Democratic program similar to 2025. I guess she means Project 2025 from the Democratic perspective that works to take government away from Trump, give it back to the American people. I wonder, what do you see as the future project of the Democratic Party? Because there are so many built in, you know, in terms of the structure of the Senate and the Electoral College, there are some seemingly difficult to overcome built-in disadvantages at this time for Democrats.
Well, it hurts me to say this, but I'm going to. The polling bears this out. The public confidence in both political parties is low, very low, perhaps the lowest in current memory. I can point to problems with the Trump administration. Republicans can point to problems with Democrats. The fact of the matter is neither party is enjoying the confidence of the American people that we get it, that we understand what the average family is going through on a daily and weekly basis. And shame on us. We've let this happen, but we can change it. And your texter, whoever that might be, is on the right track. We have to have a vision for the future that really captures the imagination of the American people and leads to a majority again in Congress and to a president of the Democratic Party. But we have to work at it, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done. I want to be part of that conversation. My golf clubs have not been used in years. I don't have the fishing tackle that some people might have. I'm not planning on going to retire to a rocking chair. I hope I'll be actively involved in the ebb and flow of a public opinion in Illinois for years to come.
Last question. I know so far you have not made an endorsement in the among the many people who are looking to succeed you in the Senate. I wonder what you would like to see in that person, though, as a voter.
Well, I'm lucky. When I decided to run for the United States Senate, the incumbent Senator Paul Simon endorsed my candidacy. I was a relatively obscure congressman from downstate Illinois, and he said, I'm going to back this person to succeed me. And a lot of people said, well, if Paul thinks he's a decent guy, I'll give him a chance. And that's how I ended up in the United States Senate, a downstate Democrat representing the state of Illinois in the Senate now for almost 30 years. I don't plan on endorsing because already there are two or three candidates who are running who are personal friends of mine who I think would make good senators. I want the voters to make that decision. But I'm not ruling it out completely because if there are extraordinary circumstances, I may reconsider. But I don't plan on it now. Leave it to the Democratic voters in the primary.
Senator Dick Durbin, thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian.
Dick Durbin is the senior United States Senator for Illinois. He has announced he will not run for re-election next year. Later today, we are scheduled to tape an interview with Illinois' junior United States Senator, Democrat Tammy Duckworth. We're planning to bring that to you tomorrow. If you have questions for Senator Duckworth, let us know. Talk@21stshow.org is the email address. Talk@21stshow.org. Coming up after the break, a deep dive into the state of federal funding of public media. This is the 21st Show.